Welcome to the Wheelchair Roundtable, where wheels turn, stories roll, and the spirit never hits the brakes. I'm your host, Rico, ATP, podcast wrangler, and proud believer that duct tape and zip ties fix everything except tilting space. And with me is the man, the myth, the... Did he just say that? Legend Roland Reyes, ATP co-host, ATP Jedi, and more importantly, a veteran who served our country. Together, we're bringing you voices from across the country, clinicians, inventors, end users, and legends of the mobility world, all pulling up to our table, to the Wheelchair Roundtable. Born in the Rio Grande Valley, built for the world. Let's get rolling, man. How you doing, Roland? What's going on?
I'm doing pretty well today, man. I'm excited. New show, first episode.
Mm-hmm.
I am extremely excited, dude.
Yeah, me too. So how'd I get this idea? You know, when I got this idea is when you and I were driving from Sniff and we're talking about seat depth.
Yeah.
And you went off, brother, like a professor singing music to my ears, bro. And I was like, man, people need to hear this.
Well, that's literally the most important thing you've got to get right on that wheelchair.
The seat depth.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll save that for another episode.
Yeah.
Because we could talk about that.
Yeah.
A lot, right.
Forever.
So on this episode, I want to talk about like why we started, what an ATP is, mm-hmm. and who is an ATP, right?
Right.
So let's go ahead and start off with this. Let me ask you this. So whenever you introduce yourself to somebody and they ask you what you do for a living and you say, hey, I'm an ATP, they all have this look on their face of
quizzical
confusion. And they're just like, what did he just say?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to share one story that happened to me, right? So I'm at a kind of like a mixer after hours when I was working for locally here in McAllen before I moved to Houston. And it was a home health mixer, right? And I got introduced to this lady. Her name is Mary. Well, she's a nurse, I think so, right? And she asked me what I did. I said, hey, well, I'm an ATP. Well, she looks at me and she says, do you have any weakness? Do you feel any fatigue? And she says, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And she walks off, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell? You know, I'm trying to think, well, yeah, I went to the gym a little weak and just running my mind. It's like, yeah, maybe. How can she tell, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fast forward a week later, a friend of mine, who mutual friend, calls me up, well, who knows her, and he's on the phone, brother, dead serious. He's like, hey, Rico, I just want you to let you know that I'm going to be here for you through this. And whatever you need, I'm going to help you out. Whether it be financially, spiritually, I got you.
He's a real one.
And I'm like, what the hell is this guy talking about, right?
Yeah.
And at the point, I'm like, oh, man, this guy's got me on the radio or something. He's punking me out, right?
Right.
So I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? He goes, I spoke with Mary, brother. She told me you have ALS. I'm like, what? I go, I told her I'm an ATP. Brother. I didn't tell her I had fucking ALS. Sorry about the word. Sorry. But what response do you usually get?
Anytime I'm asked, usually the way that was presented to me always is my card. It says ATP, says QRP.
Right.
Like, what's an ATP? And I always, as I was telling you pre-show, I always answer a terrific person. And then I actually explain what it actually means. You know, it's an assistive technology professional with a certain level of education and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you take a test for a designation, for the ATP designation.
For the test, who governs it?
RESNA.
RESNA.
Rehabilitation.
Engineering Society of North America.
Those guys.
I'm not mistaken, it was what, established in 1979? So when you go to the RESNA website, what does it tell you, Roland? It tells you a description of what they feel an engineer should be.
Yeah, the Rehab Engineering and Assistive Technology Society of North America, it's a premier professional organization dedicated to promoting the health and well-being of people with disabilities through increasing access to technology solutions. RESNA advances the field by offering certification, continuing education, and professional development, developing assistive technology standards, promoting research and public policy, and sponsoring forums for the exchange of information and ideas to meet the needs of our multidisciplinary constituency. RESNA is a 501 not-for-profit membership association. So it's legal. The organization's legal name is RESNA, RESNA in all caps.
And RESNA's goal is to maximize health and well-being of people with disabilities through technology.
Yep.
The purpose of RESNA is to contribute to the public welfare through scientific, literary, professional, and educational activities by supporting the development, dissemination, and utilization of knowledge and practice in rehabilitation and assistive technology in order to achieve the highest quality of life for all citizens. So what does that mean? It's a lot of good stuff, you know, a lot of description. You know, I think the best way people are going to understand is I think if we share our story. How do we get into the industry? ERT, how blessed we are to work in this industry.
Well, the way it happened for me, Rico.
Tell me.
I was in the U.S. I was a U.S. Navy corpsman for 3 years in the Navy. In Desert Storm, got home a year later, and I was looking for a job, as simple as that. And there was an ad in the paper. In the news, I think it was the San Antonio Express News. There's an ad in the paper for a driver with medical experience. $5 an hour, dude. $5 an hour.
What year was this?
This was January 27th, 1992. I remember the day.
You do?
So I applied. I went and applied. Dude, I didn't get the job. A dude that I went to high school with got the job. So they called me, said, you didn't get the job. Yeah, it was all good. Within a week and a half, I got a call back. Said, do you still want the job? I said, yeah, of course. You know, I was fresh out of the Navy. I still had money coming in. And so, and some other benefits, and I was going to start going to school. I was going to be a registered nurse, dude. That was the goal. That was the plan. I wanted to carry that forward. So once I got the job, I took, basically what I was doing was delivering hospital beds, standard wheelchairs, K2, 3, 4, what we would call today, walkers, commodes, oxygen. So I did that for a few months. And I began to see that we do CRT, which we didn't know. There was no words other than we called it rehab. Or they called it rehab. So in the beginning, I was kind of in a tech role, if you think about it, because I was all the stuff that there was no ATP designation at the time, but there was a guy that did what we do now. And so I remember putting together quickie power chairs with J seating. Do you remember the J drop seat?
Yes.
With the hooks?
Drops.
So modifying the chair, dude, like modifying the seating So basically, I figured out that there's modifications that need to happen. I set those J hooks down and the seat where it needed to be. And I realized I had to cut the bucket so that the footrest swung in and out. So I took to it, dude. I would start stealing the magazines, the rehab magazine from the bathroom, dude. I would steal them, take them home, and started to just fall in love with the work. And I remember asking the guys who would be ATPs today, like, how do you decide who gets what? Like, why does that guy have tilt? This guy doesn't. Why does this guy have tilt and the other guy doesn't? And so I always tell people that want to be ATPs, those are the first questions I asked. How? Why?
Exactly.
So I wanted to know. And so the guy that was in charge of me, the what would be an ATP today, he kind of recognized it in me that I was doing good work without him having to direct me on how. And he told me, you're going to be a star someday. You're in this business. And I was like, wow, I don't even know what this business is. But I went along. And as the months grew into a year and a half, I absolutely fell in love where I started doing it myself. Meaning a client would come in, I would just decide, I'll do your chair. So everything for submissions to insurance were different than they are today. It was easy. It was one page at the time. And so I started deciding, it's going to be this chair with tilt because you have ulcers. So I started learning a little bit at a time. And you're basically stacking bricks of knowledge, you know. So that's essentially how I started. I left and my uncle had come by to pick me up for lunch. Robert.
Is this in
Uvalde? My uncle came by and I showed him what I did for a living. We're going to go to lunch at Little Caesars next door. And he always was looking for a way to invest money into like a business. He wanted business ideas. And so I said, this does well and it helps people. And so we decided to open up our own. I left Wheelchairs Plus, the name of the company I was with, left. And we started our own DME company competing with them. And that was in 95, late 94, early 95. So we ended up growing the company quite a bit, doing well where we could pay ourselves a decent salary. And I started to stack chairs, started to learn how to market myself, learn how to produce the work, learned how to measure, learned how to decide like who's getting tilt, who's getting reclined, learning manual wheelchairs, standard wheelchairs, the differences, and just kept it going up until about 2001. And we did okay. By 2001, we were doing well. I had several school districts, Eagle Pass, Del Rio, and Laredo, both school districts in Laredo. And I started kind of making a name for myself in that little area and started producing eventually really good work, like really like unique ideas for what we do. And it sort of added my own flavor to what I'd already learned from other people, other work I'd seen at Wheelchairs Plus. And so at that point, finances kind of were not very good for the company and for me myself. I had a vehicle repossessed, so I needed to find a job. So I fired off exactly 12 resumes, different companies that did CRT at the time. This is late 2001, early 2002. And a man by the name of Joe Marshall out of Fartex, he calls me and says, hey, I'd like to interview you. And can you come down to McAllen or far in McAllen area? I said, I can be there, I think it was a Monday or a Friday. So I can be there Friday. So I interviewed, got the job, got a salary more than I'd ever made in my life, which wasn't much compared to today, right? So yeah, dude, I was pretty stoked. And I felt like I was an incomplete seating specialist at that time. And there was a guy named Michael there. We both know who Mike is. So he was a huge influence professionally, personally. And I learned a lot from him. And I feel like he probably learned a couple of things from me as well. So I within 6 months, I basically became who I am today.
Really?
That short period of time. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, dude, because what he knew and what I knew, kind of put it together, and then working side by side with him, it improved me. Like, he opened my eyes, especially a lot of stuff related to, like, hypertonicity.
Okay.
How it affected seating and molding. I felt like he probably did molds more often than he needed to, which later on, that became me, you know?
Yeah.
And so he was a huge influence on me, and props to Mike. And so, yeah, I would say within 6 months, I am who I am today as far as the knowledge level. I've added a little since then, you know, here and there. But that essentially was it. Worked there for about 9 years. Towards the end of that, the last few years, I was a rehab manager, basically managed everyone but a couple of people, including Michael. And then received an opportunity from the bigger company in the world, the National Seating and Mobility. And I had to take the opportunity to open up my own branch, run my own branch. And I did that from 11 to 22, did some good work. We grew the branch from zero to where we ended up at that point. And that's it. And then, of course, the rest is history.
You've been doing this how long? 33 years?
33 years.
33
years. Yep.
You mean?
It is.
Well,
I'm grateful. You know, people often ask each other, you know, what do you want people to remember you for? I loved this job, dude. Like, I absolutely loved helping people. Mm-hmm. Loved seeing the difference that I can make based on what I saw other people's mistakes. When I was at NSM, every time we modified a wheelchair, dude, I would take, if it wasn't my chair, I would take the sticker off the chair and we put it on our back bay door. So by the time we moved out of that building, I'd say about 5-6 years later, whole wall was full of stickers. So that told you that, you know, they lost a referral for one reason or the other, and it ended up in my hands. But I always felt, dude, I always felt like that it was so important to get things right. Replace so many poor systems with the seat depths that were too long. It was very generically done. And I felt like we did some pretty good work.
Compared to like the off-the-shelf seating some people use?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like I did a few things that were innovative.
Like?
Molds on strollers.
What type of mold?
At the time, it could have been any kind of mold. Towards the end, it was probably more ride than anything else.
Yeah, you like ride.
Yeah, I love ride.
Why?
Because I can modify it on the fly at delivery. I can cut it. Can open it, close it for winter, summer. Summer, winter. Need a jacket. We got to open that thing up.
Yep. Not that it gets cold down here.
Yeah, I know.
Well, how did I get in this industry? So in 97, I got hired to work at a local pharmacy. We did DME. We were doing DME wheelchairs, but mostly started with the incontinence and the diabetic supplies when they were paying for them back then.
Were they?
Yeah. It was a lot of work, man, for such low reimbursement now that I think about it, but I didn't know any better. Fast forward, went to MedTrade, saw some power chairs. And I said, yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. And then the owner said, hey, I've heard you can make some pretty good money selling this rehab stuff. And I said, okay, let's look at it. So I started looking into it and didn't know crap. Didn't know what I was looking at. Yeah. You know, that's where it stayed.
Yeah.
It couldn't grow because I did not have the education. I had the desire to learn, right?
Yeah.
I just didn't have the resource.
Yeah.
So in 2022, I applied for a job with PMTI, Local Professional Medical Technology Incorporated.
Know them.
And then that was in 2002. And I met a man by the name of Mr. Robert Regino. He used to work at Marshall. He used to do all the vehicle conversions.
Wow, we have a Michael and Robert Regino mentioned.
So real hard ass man. Throw me a bone?
Share,
or show? Nothing.
Share with you?
Education? You know? Well,
share the knowledge.
I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
Right. But come to when it came full circle, he was just testing me out. So he took me under his wing. We started doing lifts. We did Harmar, Bruno, went to Oconomowoc, Wisconsin for the Bruno training, for the tourneys and for the curbsiders, did all that.
Yeah.
Star training. We had vans that come into the shop. We cut off the roofs and start putting lifts in there. That's how we started doing lifts.
Yeah.
And then he broke out and showed me the Invicare Tarsus system. Remember the Tarsus?
Oh my God. I haven't even heard or thought of that word.
Yeah. So he got me onto Tarsus.
Yeah.
And that's where I started learning rehab, right?
Yep.
Little by little. Was able to wrap my mind around it. Well, at that time, the owner caught on that this guy, he's doing pretty
motivated.
Good. Yeah. So he sent me to U.S. Rehab, sent me to MedTrade, sent me to Bruno, sent me all over the world, Virginia. He shipped me around.
Yeah.
He was invested in me. Wrapped my mind around it. But luckily for me, I had Regino to speak the language because it was a lot, man. A lot to learn.
Yeah.
But luckily I had this guy kind of filter and say, well, this is what they mean, So I felt confident, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we went to we went to the Tarsus training, Invicare training, and that's where I met you. That's the first time I saw you.
Okay.
Yeah, you were sitting down
Walked up to me. Walked up to me. Yeah, I remember.
I was, hey, man, you do real good work. I remember that, dude.
Yeah, fanboy.
Because you know why? Because you were the only other Latino ATP.
Yeah, I was not the first, the second. In Texas,
probably, brother.
Yeah,
there too. In the training, met you, came back, and had an opportunity to go into partnership with a DME company. I said, fine, I took it. 25%, no investment up front. I took it, brother. So we started
Sweat Equity,
MedEquip Mobility.
Medi-Quip. Okay.
Well, we were just doing a bunch of K-10s, K-11s, you know, the CMN, yes, no, how many hours. That's
right,
all
right,
we were doing.
Right.
I didn't know rehab. I thought that was rehab.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't rehab. So we were pushing out chairs. And I remember Guy Knight. You ever meet Guy Knight from Pride?
No.
He was with Kerry White, dude. They were partners. So
no.
Guy Knight would rep Pride. And of course, Kerry would do Quantum.
Yeah.
Those guys came in and started talking rehab. They found out about me, right? And then remember the old Invacare rep?
Tommy?
Tommy Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
So Tommy Campbell would come around. He started showing me stuff, introducing me. So little by little, I was able to wrap my mind. And then Guy Knight, I remember he came to me. He goes, hey, brother, are you gonna take that exam? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you have to be an ATP now to start doing complex rehab. What was it, 2011? Something like that?
No, it was earlier, dude. Yeah. That's the only reason I took it. Because I was no longer going to be able to, when I was at Marshall Mobility, I was no longer going to be able to do seating. For Medicaid, I had that designation. So Michael, at the time, we went to Las Vegas, and I don't remember what year it was, 05, or I'd have to look it up, but we went to Vegas, and I passed it, and it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life, and I'll tell it on another episode, because it was one of those challenging things in my life. Dude, I've always been a decent test taker, but that for me at the time, is very challenging.
Absolutely.
I think if I took a practice test today, 20 questions, I mean, I would still doubt whether I got everything right, because there's always two opinions on everything, right? And so, that's how that was for me.
So, I took mine in 2011. I took an exam, right? Yeah. So, Guy?
So, I remember what I was going to say.
Go for it.
So, I was actually I really didn't participate other than for moral support when all that was being put into law by several people throughout Texas. Mike, again, we're talking about Mike being like one of the instigators of that whole thing, dude, because in a way I always looked at it like, well, we want to reduce the competition, but also the main thing was to have a certain level of knowledge to pass that ATP to be dealing with that high level of client, because, and I'll get into it a little bit later, but you can do a lot of harm in this line of work.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of harm. And I'm not saying that I never have. I probably have early on. So you've got to get certain things, certain keys
right.
And if you don't get that done, if your seating's off in any sort of way, then nothing else is really going to work for you. You know. So
I remember talking to you, and we were talking about standards.
Yeah.
And you went off and told me about the hips, hip development, and the weight bearing, and everything like that. Dude, I was freaking amazing. We need to talk about that later on.
Yeah, that's for another show.
So took my Guy Knight. Kerry, I got to take this exam. Put it off, brother. I don't need to take it.
That's how I was.
Jeez, brother. So
little rebels.
At that time, I didn't take it, right? So I sold my percent from Medi-Quip, took a local job, and then I sat for the exam. Luckily, I passed it the first time, brother. I passed it the first time. Do I take this test today? Will I pass? Probably not.
Hey, did you get the envelope?
No, brother.
So I, you know, they say
old school.
So old school, dude. I took it in Vegas. It was like in high school, a little answer sheet. You know,
like a Scantron?
A little booklet. And so literally they tell you it's 6 weeks. Brother, I was actually on the airplane ride back home, realizing it was a 200-question test. And my whole life depended on me passing that test.
Yeah.
And so I started going through all the questions in my head on the flight home from Vegas.
You remembered the questions?
I remembered a lot of the questions. I remembered that there was two answers to every question.
Exactly.
And let me tell the story real quick.
Go for it.
I struggled the first 10 questions, dude. I had no answers for the first 10 questions. So I started in my head making excuses why, it's okay if I fail the first time. And so no, after a while I got angry. What I did is I flipped it on its head. I went to the booklet, flipped it to the last page, started on question 200 and started going backwards. So when I got to those first 10 questions,
you had an idea.
No, whatever happened, I overcame it. And those last 10 questions, I'm almost certain I aced them. It was the easiest 10 questions I'd ever answered in my life. But the beginning, I was so intimidated. So like my life depends on this and my livelihood and credibility, all those things. So fast forwarding the story. So they say it takes 6 weeks. You'll get your results 6 weeks in the mail. So what I didn't want to see was an envelope.
Yeah,
I'm folding up a paper three ways. So
like your traditional mail, you get in the mailbox.
That is, you didn't get this done.
That's
exactly right. So mine was actually a manila envelope with width and length of a sheet of paper, which would be a certificate.
Right.
So that's how it showed up. It's one of the happiest days of my lives outside of the birth of my
kid.
And, you know, meeting my wife and all those things. It was a monumental moment.
Changed your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Just three little letters, ATP. Now I was legit.
Yes.
And now I, you know, it was just an amazing accomplishment for me, dude. Just for me.
I know of an ATP who failed it several times.
Well, I know a few of those.
Yeah. And they were like on their last attempt, and they were going to lose $1 million business. They were going to lose some big clinics because they wouldn't pass that exam.
Some of the best people I've ever met failed the first time.
Exactly, brother. Yeah, I mean, for us, it's like what we're doing, designing, building, and all of a sudden they come, you need to take an exam to keep doing this.
Yeah.
There was two ways to look at it. One, finally, there's going to be some type of accountability in this industry to whereas XYZ DME doesn't order a tilt and space power and drops it off.
Yeah, because literally a high school grad, 18 years old, could go work at a pharmacy with and they have a Medicaid number at the time.
Right.
They could spec out a $23,000, $25,000, $30,000 chair.
Isn't that crazy?
Get paid for it, not with no knowledge of anatomy, no knowledge of, you know, skin breakdown, shearing, line tilt. Oh, you know, everything that we factor in every day of our lives in this line of work.
That's the way it was.
And, you know, me and Mike certainly weren't that. But there was a lot of people like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of fly-by-night, a lot of drop-and-run, meaning, man, they just need you to sign that paperwork. And they're away from
remember the Wheeler Dealer Act in Houston? Yeah,
well, I have vague memories of it.
Jesus, man. I heard the story. Yeah. It's just a lot to get into.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's a whole show.
They were putting people on buses, loading them up, taking them to a clinic. Right there, right them up. There you go. Pump out. Group three.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when I passed my ATP, I threw out my resumes to Houston, right? Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, the best move for me and my family, my wife, was just to move out of the valley, right? Yeah, just for a better opportunity.
I know where this is going. Keep going.
So I got a call I got a response like within an hour from two different ones.
Yep.
One was a company in Houston, CRT, I think it was in Missouri, in Stafford, off, I forget which road it was, but they were located there. So people listening to this who are in the industry, we're talking about, and AC Medical. So AC Medical is Jim Davis, all right? Jim Davis, if it wasn't for Jim Davis, brother, I would have not been able to start a career in Houston.
Yeah.
Got up there. He gave me a company car. You know, just was so supportive, right?
Credit card?
No, I wasn't at that point yet. And there was another ATP there by the name of Ken Lee. He was Vietnamese. He was a Marine, you know, and he was
for five.
He did a lot of stuff, brother. He's a good guy, very smart guy. He was going to medical school, become a doctor. So I think he got back out of the industry. And I don't know if he's a doctor. For all I know, he's probably a physician by now. So working for AC Medical, and Jim Davis, dude, is a character. I'll tell you stories off the air about this. Maybe we can do a special like behind-the-scenes stories and shit.
MA for mature audiences.
Exactly, brother. And so I'm working for him. He opened up a second location for me in North Houston off the Beltway, close to 45, close to the airport, right? Uh-huh. So I was working there, and I'm trying to get better, right? And this is the reason why I needed to get better.
Yeah.
So Stephanie O'Connor runs the Texas Children's Wheelchair Clinic, right? She's solid. She knows her stuff.
Yeah.
So somehow another AC Medical got a referral for it was money from another country, something like that. I can't remember. So they got me involved, right? Mm-hmm. So she calls me up and she's like, hey, who are you? Whatever. I have to introduce myself. She goes, I want you to look at the Freedom order form and let's go ahead and spec out the chair over the phone. I'm like, what? What does that mean? I'm like looking at this and I'm just going through it. And I tell her straight up, hey, I'm not your guy.
Yeah,
I can't do this for you. I'm not going to lie.
And it looks really confusing, to be honest.
Dude, I'll talk about it.
Even today for me, I know what I want, but I have to kind of sometimes decipher, like they change something, like some of the language changes or whatever. But they have a profile on us there at Freedom Designs.
Yeah.
And so they kind of know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It just, the sizes change, the depths and lengths of like the anti-thrust change or the biangular back. All those things change the size of the laterals. But generally, I kind of do it the same for that high tone cerebral palsy group of kids and adults. I kind of do the same thing, just tailored to their situation, measurements, body.
Well, you got a formula.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
We'll talk about that.
Yep.
So after that, I learned I need to figure this out if I'm going to survive, you know, not make it, but just survive in the big market. So I find out back then the internet wasn't what it is today, right?
Yeah.
TXRPC in Round Rock, Texas, right?
Oh, yeah, I was there.
Yeah, I know you were there.
Yeah.
So I'm there, TXRPC. God rest his soul, Foster Davis. Missed that guy.
Yeah, that's my guy, man. Brother.
We'll talk about him later. So I'm there. The only rep that I recognize is John Piazza. At that time, John Piazza was repping Freedom. Came in here, hey, Rico. So I kind of got an idea, and then I saw you. And you're like, hey, man, you ever think about coming to work for NSM?
Sounds like something I'd say.
And I was like, seriously, really? And I'm like, yeah. So you set it up. So I met John Bertone in his suite upstairs. I don't know who else.
I walked you up, dude.
Yeah, I know. And then you just took off. So I met John Bertone.
Try to fish me out another one, man.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna explain what you mean right now.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there with Bertone. I don't know shit about rehab. I'm just bullshitting, right? Just trying to get through it. And he was like, well, if I gave you your own processor and helped you out with blah, 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 and set you up for success, how much more could you increase your current business? And he's like, wow, that's impressive. You could do 30%.
You're winging it?
Yes, dude. I don't know. Hey,
fake it till you make it.
So make a long story short, he said, okay, we'll get back to you. So I went on my way. You were gone. And he calls me up later that day. Took me to the suite. Hey, we're going to offer you a letter. This is what we're going to do. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, holy shit.
Did we start plying you with Miller Lite or something, dude? Budweiser? I think we did.
Yeah, y'all got me pretty tore up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
But tell them why you recruited me to NSM.
Oh, there's a little bonus involved.
Pimping my ass out, man.
You know, my boss had asked me, hey, if you know anybody while you're here. So I wanted to come up to the conference. And so I, you know, he goes, well, if while you're here, let's make it really, really useful and do this. And so I said, I will go out there and try and figure it out. And I right away, I saw your 6'4". But
well, tell them what. They wanted you to recruit an ATP, right?
Yeah.
That was your mission.
It was my absolute mission. And I did. Within 10 minutes of being on the floor there.
Yeah, you saw me.
Yeah, right away.
And guess how?
My work was done the first night, first day.
How much did you pimp my ass out for?
I can't say, dude. I can't say, yes, but I could have probably paid for all this equipment we bought.
Yep. $3,000, I'll say it.
So, well, I think I might have taken a trip to New York City with that money, if I'm not mistaken.
You give me a shout out at least? Like, hey, man, thanks.
Yeah, I should have, dude.
Man,
I should
have. Jeez, bro. I'm surprised you didn't get more than one.
I did it. I was 1 for 3. 2 other people just kind of like looked at me like, dude, I don't do corporate. I'm like, and it was at the time, dude, at the time, NSM was so not corporate. They were all about the quality of our work and being a clinician and, of course, increased sales and all that stuff. But it was very, very important that if you know the Mike Ballard story.
Yes.
Then you know how important, you know, the song in your heart, mm-hmm. that you have the song. I definitely had the song in my heart. And so do a lot of other people. And so, you know, Mike was super important to me, dude. Even though we didn't really chat or anything much. His vision, his mission. He said some nice things to a reporter about me. What's her name? The reporter?
Oh, I forget the one for mobility management.
Yeah, mobility management. She did a little article on me.
I forgot her
name. And he said some very complimentary things. And I remember one of my quotes was like, I just get such a thrill from when I do something well.
Yes.
And it changes their life. It was just so incredibly.
Where else can you do that?
I'm sure there's other things you can do.
But
for us, it's especially rewarding, dude, because sometimes you get to see kids from a year old to high school graduation and beyond. And so I have, to this day, you know I do, I have several clients that I've had since they were 1 or 2 years old and they're in their 20s now. And even since I've come on to our company that we work for now, after having been gone for a few years, they still find me on Facebook. They look for me and their experiences with me were, to quote one of the moms, was unique.
Yep.
It was great. I missed you and, you know, those types of things. And it was, and I always did right by her. That particular client was, I just saw her the other day. I just did an eval for a custom wheelchair with her.
And is that the one that found you on Facebook?
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Man, a lot of people are asking for you, bro. I had a quick story. I had a referral that I was doing a group 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the house. And we're like, hey, I did his chair. Doing a chair for Marty over here. Yeah. Hey, I did his chair.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know who else.
We've had that happen several times. And you bring up a name. I'm like, oh, I did that.
We're talking on the past 2 months.
Yeah, I know. Only.
Yep. So when I went to NSM, I left AC Medical, which is tough because they did so much for me.
Yeah.
But it was an opportunity, man.
Yeah.
So I went in there thinking, yeah, I know some rehab, you know, I'm getting some stuff. I went to TXRPC. I know some stuff. So I walk into branch 4 Houston when they were still on Knight Road before they moved to the big branch.
Yeah.
Quickly realized I didn't know a damn thing. Quickly realized seeing all these technicians, seeing all this inventory, hearing them talk this rehab, walking into the rooms, having evaluation rooms. Yeah. Back then at Knight Road, it was all the techs were in a small freaking room, man, rubbing elbows in the warehouse. It was amazing. And I learned real quick.
The certificate is great, but the practical application competitively is what makes you an ATP eventually. It's, you know what I mean?
Yes. Like,
absolutely.
Yep. So when I was there and, you know, we had asked about what is an ATP, right? I got the perfect answer when I was there. And this is what I was told. And this is what I say. I design and build custom medical equipment for handicapped children and adults.
Yeah. That's.
You know who taught me that?
Who did?
Dave Butcher.
Butcher.
Dude, that guy's amazing.
Need a cigarette, Butcher.
I was lucky enough when I met Dave and just the way he talked and all the knowledge he has. Dude, I was just like, dude, this guy's amazing.
Yeah.
So I was lucky to sit at his UTMB clinic going south on 45 toward Galveston. Uh-huh. Sat there real quick, saw him work. I was like, okay, I want to do that.
Yeah.
My numbers were shit, so that didn't last very long.
Yeah.
Wasn't long before Charles Sargent came down here and said, hey, you need to start producing or we're going to let you go.
Yeah.
So fast forward 2016, he was an Invacare rep. Cool dude. He said Invacare is going to launch the rehab. They're going to launch TDX SP2. At the time, Invacare was under a consent decree. Couldn't order anything. Shut everything down. So they hired Dean Childers to run it. They hired me. Dean flew in to Houston, had an interview with him. He had me write a letter on how he wanted me to compare how I would bring out the TDX SP2 and compare it to something else. So also at that time, Chevrolet was going to relaunch the Camaro. It had been off the market. So I compared it to, I did a whole paper on the Camaro. So he hired me off that. I'm not a Chevy guy, bro. I don't like Chevy.
Yeah.
But it got me the job, right? So I do the whole onboarding stuff, go to Ohio, and I find out that I have got to learn about Invacare, Lynx, the software, top end, hand cycles, Freedom Designs, Albert. What else did I have?
They got multiple lines.
Matrix.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yep.
And I was so blessed. That's when I learned rehab.
That's funny. Almost no one learns rehab at the rep level. Like they either already knew it.
Yep. I came in the back door.
Or their therapist. Yes. And became reps.
So I got all that training, came back to Houston. I was responsible for educating Tier Hospital on how to use Invacare products.
You went a long ways from that first week.
Oh, man. So there I am. So at that time, they wanted to launch the Cushol. You familiar with Cushol?
Absolutely.
European wheelchair. Absolutely. So they bought it, and they wanted us to launch it. I said, cool, right? So I get set up in service on the Cushol at Tier Hospital, inpatient hospital.
Yep.
So I'm there with the Cushol. I'm putting it up there, brother, and I bomb the in service. And I just wrapped it up. And
it happens.
No, dude, it was bad. So at that time,
dude, I've bombed.
No, dude. It was in front of, have you bombed in front of Tier? The number two hospital in the nation.
No.
So luckily, Terry Blessings, I want to get him on the show. He was there and he pulled me aside and he's been a rep a long time and he talked to me about it. But I learned and I got better at it until I got real good at it. And how did I succeed with Invacare? I had a regional manager by the name of Mark Scott. You got to meet him.
Yeah, I met Mark day before yesterday.
He can inspire you, bro. I wanted to work for this guy. I wanted to make him look good because he was all about supporting you.
Right.
And he recognized your weak strengths, your weakness and your strengths, and just worked on it. Well, when I came time to resign, I wanted to take another job. He kept me on the phone for like an hour and 40 minutes talking to me why not to leave Invacare. I took a regional position with another company that just did sniffs. Fast forward, family issues came up. Mom passed away.
Yeah.
Mother-in-law had a stroke, so we moved back home. And Mr. Jeff McDaniel, our boss, and he gave me a shot, man. I started rehab down here in the Valley with a credit card and a business card. And luckily enough, I pulled it off.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at today as far as the ATP.
I can't wait to be where you're at a year from now.
What?
Yeah.
Is that good or bad, man?
That's good.
So like, hopefully that gives your listeners.
I was out of the industry for a little bit, for a minute.
Man, you're going to kick some ass in a year, for sure. Now, there's a famous ATP.
Joel? Joel?
Joel? Don't call him Joel. He hates it when you call him Joel.
I'm from Uvalde. Like, I'm going to say Joel.
And we're talking about an ATP in Houston by the name of Joel.
That is.
It is. He's a boxer. He is a former boxer. And I did some research on him because I wanted to get some props. I called him earlier and asked him, hey, man, we're going to talk about you on the show. Is it cool? And he said, yeah, go for it. So
he went off, dude.
We need to get him on the show. That guy is hilarious.
So my roomie. We'll talk about that some other time.
So in March 22nd, 1997, at the Memorial Coliseum in Corpus, Mr. Joe Perez was 21-0. And he fought Jesse James Leija for the NABF lightweight title. In 12 rounds, he lost the fight.
Yeah.
But if you look at the fight, it's on YouTube. I think he pulled it off.
He was banging.
Now, Jesse James Leija, check out this guy, bro. Jesse James Leija fought Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward, Victor Camacho Jr., Shane Mosley, and Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, my boy was up there, man.
That's Jesse James Leija, brother. Yeah. And Joel went toe-to-toe.
Toe-to-toe.
So much that they had a rematch. And in January 20th, 1998, same in San Antonio, he went up against him. And again, he didn't get the decision. But he's a good guy, man.
Yeah.
I met him when I was working at Branch 4. It's like, that's not one guy you want to piss off.
Yeah, no.
And
not at all.
This guy's a character. So whenever you're a new hire at Branch 4, he'll tell you he's a janitor.
Yeah.
And he will convince you.
Oh yeah, he's got the he sells it, dude. Like I said, I roomed with him a couple times, and we hung out a couple times, more than a couple
times. At the symposium.
At our NSM symposiums, for sure.
Yeah.
And he is the character, dude. And
Well, we got to get him on the show, man. So, you know, ATPs are out there. But as far as an ATP, I'm going to say this. Whenever we get called for a clinic, especially when I do inpatient rehab, it's a spinal cord.
Yeah.
It's a stroke. It's something very involved. That's when you call us in.
Yeah.
Patient. And okay, let's say Jack is going home from work, has the music going, great time, life's great. Somebody runs a red light, T-bones him. Now he's got a spinal cord injury, gets rushed to the hospital. Can you imagine what's going through your freaking mind? You know, it's just, you're going to the hospital, yeah. You get surgery, your family is being notified, everything changes, is everybody okay? And then you get into a rehab hospital for 2 weeks, right? Two weeks in rehab, or 3 weeks, how long they can get you going. We go in there, we do the chair, and next thing you know, you're discharged home, and now you're sitting in front of your TV asking yourself, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
Who sees those patients the rest of their lives?
Not sure.
We do.
Absolutely.
Because we modify the equipment to them, we maintenance it, and they stay with us. You know, so when I'm doing an evaluation, I tell them, like, you're stuck with me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to service this for the life of the chair.
That's always
I'm
going
to be
goal.
Your guy.
Yeah, that's always my goal, is to keep them forever. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't. But
but you've done kids that have gone into being teenagers adults. And being adults, right?
Yep. Oh yeah.
So as far as them changing when they're growing, what's been your experience? That's the most significant change when they're from peds.
It really depends on which diagnosis you're dealing with. Cerebral palsy. Sometimes you start seeing more cerebral palsy and muscular dystrophy. Mm-hmm. You start to see a lot of physical changes like scoliosis, gravity takes over, increased muscle tone. They start sliding out more. And a lot of it, this is just my opinion, and it might be an unhealthy opinion to kind of push around, but I feel like it's true. A lot of people do more harm by getting the seat depth wrong, getting the seat width wrong, not molding when you needed to mold them to control that tone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's incumbent that you choose the right equipment, the right, you do the mold solid, and because you end up causing a kyphotic effect, tightening the hamstrings, they're windswept, a lot of things happen, and so at that point you have to get it right. And I see a lot of cases, and used to see more of it than I do now, of just straight up robbery, where it's like, I can't believe anybody would do this there. And there were some guys out there, they're gone already from the industry, but there were some guys out there, everyone out there right now, for me, I feel like they're pretty legit, everybody around here,
right?
There's so few really ATPs down here in the valley. I think there's 5 or 6 of us, yes. 7 of us, maybe 6 of us. And I think everyone's pretty solid right now. But there was a point in time when some of the people we mentioned earlier in the podcast, when they were doing it, they were just doing it and everything was wrong. Everything was off. And there was like a cookie cutter thing that they were doing. And I remember my former boss at Marshall Mobility, he used to call it the Valley Special. It was a purple or pink chair with purple seating or pink seating. And it was a T-back, and it was a Stimulite cushion and 90 degree footrest, regardless of anything. So that's just pretty plain or pretty flat, and people are gonna slide out. Their hips are gonna slide out. There was no hip guides. And sometimes there was hip guides, but they were exaggerated, too long, too high, set up too narrow, just different things like that.
So when you're talking about the neglect, what did you see in the chairs that it was kind of like, what the hell's going on?
You know, I've always asked.
When you look at a chair and you have some patient come in, what's the first thing you look at?
Pelvis.
Exactly. Yeah. So what are you looking for with the pelvis?
I want to know which directions it moves. So range of motion. And for those of you, I'm sure everybody's aware of what range of motion is, but it's important to me. Anterior, how far they can go. Posterior, how far they go. So I want that hip angle. I want to understand what it is. What's the number one measurement no one takes or thinks about much, unless it's super obvious to them, is hip angle from left to right. So left hip could be at 1 degree, whatever degrees, right, it's sitting a little higher. There's a couple of ways to deal with that, and I felt like a lot of people don't deal with it, meaning you've got to either split it or mold them to accommodate both sides, because if they're inflexible, so I'm looking for flexibility versus not flexibility. So if it's flexible, you try to correct as much as you can. If it's inflexible, I mean, if it's inflexible, we accommodate, try to get the best posture possible, locate the head, midline, try to keep everything, nose, belly button, middle of the feet, everything in alignment, stabilize them, make sure you've got good control where they're sitting and they're not 90-90-90, because no one sits at 90-90-90. I've been doing it for this 40 minutes we've been on this podcast.
90-90-90, I heard that.
That doesn't work. It's too much. Have you ever been in your car, dude, and it's like, you got to push that thing back?
Yeah.
You got to open up your seat to back angle. You have to. And so there's a million things we could talk about.
But there's some people that swear off by the 90-90-90. I don't know why.
I don't believe in it. No one sits that way.
Nope. So why? just to keep them growing?
To me, it causes fatigue. No, I think it was a lack of
education.
No, but it didn't feel right. And I do everything I do. A lot of what I do is feel.
Get that feedback.
Yeah. A lot of it is physical feel, like what I'm feeling. And I'll start writing notes and I'll even draw pictures and just get a feel for what you've got going on and how I can support you. Because really the first thing I look for is not mobility. How are you going to get from point A to point B? To me, that's secondary. We'll deal with that in a second. For me, it's stabilization, accommodation, and keep them comfortable. Also, you've got to, do they weight shift? There's so many factors that go in, so many layers that go into that. And so I look at everything, dude. Sometimes there's things that you look at that you've seen before many times, but I still go through my normal process. Mm-hmm. I still check range. And so, you know, footrest, where do you get 90 degrees, 70 degrees, 80 degrees, elevating leg rest on a manual wheelchair. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast will agree with me. They're a crime.
Because you don't get them above the heart.
The pib, no. No, that has nothing to do with it. It's the, when you put an elevating leg rest, that calf pad and that pivot point where it elevates, it's so far forward. So you've got your seat depth, perfect setup, got the butt all the way back. It pulls them out. Mm-hmm. And they'll slide under the belt. I don't care what belt you put, 4 point, 2 point, does not matter. They're going to slide out because that pivot point is so far forward. And everywhere I've ever worked, I've seen somebody do it. And I've tried to tell them, that's not really working. Let me show you why. Yeah. And so I've had a couple of people call me, thank me, like, dude, I did that and you're right. And I didn't care about being right. It was just
doing the right thing.
Such an obvious thing to me. And my former boss and Marshall also felt the same way. And we were in alignment completely, dude, with philosophy on those things. And so, seating is the first focus. And then I'll deal with anything. Because especially if you're using alternative drive, you've got switches around your head. You've got to get that stable, like that girl was talking at our expo the other day.
So
you've got to stabilize.
Real quick, explain what an alternative drive is, because some people that are listening aren't wheelchair users.
That can get really deep, but alternative drive controls meaning anything other than a joystick to use to move the wheelchair.
The motorized wheelchair.
Motorized wheelchair, power chair.
Some examples are like your head array.
Head array, zip and puff.
Mini joystick.
Mini joysticks.
Fiber optics.
Fiber optics, trays. Mini joysticks where whatever movement you can get, also the foot pedal. I've used that one. Boy, I've had such great success. And they're like really high level CP guys that are adults that I have in Laredo that were so amazing they could use their cell phone with their toes.
Really?
Yeah. And so I said, foot driver, you're a foot driver, dude. Because he was so hypertonic and spastic that he could knock that. I always had to tremor dampen the joystick to slow him down so that it would only move with his true movements. And so I just said, dude, your foot, you move it is better than I move my own foot. So let's do that. So it was amazing. I did his chair twice. Jose was his first name.
Same
guy. Chair. Yeah, same setup. And he did great. He's done great. And I'm sure he's doing great now. Yep. But he's an NSM patient.
So what we've been talking about is ATP work.
Yeah.
So we started off trying to find out what is an ATP, and I think we now know who is an ATP. You know, we stick with them. We're part of the family. You've had families calling on weekends, hey, can you come fix this chair? I've had those calls, and we go out there and we get it done. All right, man. So I want to run this by you.
All right. Cletus. I pick Cletus.
No. So this is going to be the fun part. I'm sorry we got a little serious, but we are passionate. Cletus. All right. So let's pretend we're looking for a junior ATP for you, right?
Yeah.
Because we're aging out. People out there, if you're interested in assistive technology and you're listening to this, maybe you're a wheelchair user, end user.
Yeah.
This is a great profession. We need some young people.
Young blood. Did you see how many gray beards we had at the expo?
Yeah.
And I was in charge of the gray beard. You know?
We're getting up there, man. We're getting better.
I just turned 57.
So I have three potential candidates that have applied for the job.
All right.
First one is Cletus.
I love Cletus.
Cletus is a PTA who has worked in a rehab hospital for 3 years. He has attended manufacturer in-services and finds himself having conversations with the manufacturer rep after each in-service. He attended the Abilities Expo for the last 2 years. He does not directly participate in the hospital's wheelchair clinic, but does talk to the ATP after wheelchair clinic. He has an interest in CRT. That's Cletus, right?
Yeah.
But Cletus is not mechanically inclined. Does not know how to turn a wrench. Cletus gets nervous when he's talking publicly. Cletus has an inflated ego. All right. That's your first option.
Oh, he's going to be a great ATP.
This is Floyd. So Floyd has been in DME for a DME manager for 10 years. He started as a pharmacy delivery driver. Then he went to warehouse tech. And then he spent some time in the DME billing department.
Okay.
He worked his way up to management. He oversees 2 drivers and 3 warehouse techs. He is mechanically inclined, but he's not computer savvy. He has a strong, established referral base, including rehab hospitals. He's good friends with the case management team. He knows the doctors.
Right.
All right. Floyd has been reported to HR for his temper. Floyd has crashed a delivery vehicle, and Floyd likes to gossip. Okay. This is Chuck. Chuck has worked as an assembly technician at NSM for 1 year, and now is a rehab technician doing setup and delivery for high-volume ATP. He is younger, eager to learn. He worked sales at Best Buy prior to working at NSM. Never complains about being on call, and he has a child who has special needs that's in a wheelchair.
All right.
Cons. He does not have a clinical background at all. He gets nervous around clinicians and is easily intimidated. Chuck is only 22 years old, and Chuck is considering relocating to find a better opportunity.
Well, I'll tell you right now that...
Which one did you say? Like, hell no.
Floyd. Floyd's out.
Sorry, what was Floyd. It with the HR?
Floyd, you can be a barber or a bouncer.
Why? Because he's got a temper? Because
no, Floyd was the barber on the Andy Griffith Show.
I don't remember that. So Floyd's out. What did you like about him?
Was that the temper guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm rolling. Everybody knows me. But yeah, that wouldn't work out. Not if he's this way. And the first Cletus. And who's the third guy?
Chuck.
Everything they're lacking can be taught. It will increase in time. But I'm going to have to go with Cletus.
Cletus. Why?
I don't know.
Dude, he can't turn a wrench.
Dude, that can be taught.
No.
There is no special skill required to turn a wrench. It goes here. You turn lefty, loosey. What is that?
Yeah, no way.
Righty, tighty, lefty, loosey.
No. Because you're going to get that call when he does the adjustment wrong or he gets so frustrated and
that's stopped. Okay. I'll help him. I will work with him.
Well, he's under your pressure.
It can be taught.
Okay. What about him talking in public?
Let me see the sheet. Let me look at his resume again.
Here we
okay. Way means dude.
Yeah, sorry. You're gonna catch some Spanglish.
The fact that he's got anatomy, physiology, knowledge as a PTA, that school is not no joke.
Right.
I've rarely met some of my good friends in the industry are PTAs, and it just felt right as soon as you said PTA.
Right.
The fact that he talks to the ATP after the clinic is interesting to me. And you're right, he has an interest in CRT. Mm. The fact that he's killed his Saturday, maybe a whole weekend to go to the Abilities Expo.
True.
For 2 years in a row tells me everything, dude. The fact that he talks to manufacturing reps after each in-service, that shows interest because everybody wants out that door and go home and take their CEU certificates and go home.
Yeah. He sounds good.
Cletus is hanging around.
He is, but he also gets nervous in front of
people. That's okay. So do I.
So how is he going to do a presentation?
I still do 33 years. Like,
right. You're talking to I don't know how many people right now.
Yeah.
Why? Look. If I can train you and I can make you, but you can't talk, how are you going to communicate to that patient?
It can be taught.
Well,
I've worked with people who improved so much their ability to work with the public.
Gotcha.
And I'm not going to talk about him specifically, but I'm not going to say his name. But his transformation to me was remarkable. His level of success, it's remarkable because he was not that guy.
But he put in the work.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't there to witness it, but he put in that work and he became who he became. It was always there. He was just stuck in a different role for a long, long time, but he was uncomfortable as anybody I've ever seen, doing all that. And look at him now. So I think Cletus is our guy.
Okay.
The talking, he's probably always going to be a little.
What about the inflated ego?
Hey man, again, how many ATPs do you know without an inflated ego? How many do you know?
Even
if they're quiet about it.
No comment.
Because you can tell even a quiet dude,
he
knows he's that guy when he's that guy. I was that guy. I knew I was that guy.
I was that guy too. Yeah. Until I walked into NSM and got grounded real quick. Floyd? He's got a temper.
I take Floyd every day of the week, dude.
Floyd? You're talking about Cletus.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Cletus. Floyd, he was DME manager for 10 years, dude. No. 10 years? There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
He's older, apparently, if he's been working in the industry that long. Right. And he was really like an outlier industry within the industry, and DME is really not
CRT. But he's got a big referral base.
And that's great, but I'm going to take Cletus every day of the week. The PTA by itself stands alone.
But there's also this part is when you get hired by a certain company, they're going to want expectations. They're going to want numbers. They're going to want quotas.
That's where you have to be patient with people. You know, one of the great things I was telling a friend of mine on the phone the other day about, we were talking about ATPs and how they view like hiring a dude to like bringing on a new ATP. I was always, my mindset, dude, is always make them better.
Yeah.
Like I got their back.
Agreed.
And so I'm whatever gaps I can fill for them, helping them is very important to me. And so I started telling my friend, this is what Rico did for me.
Like, he literally, when I got out, when I unretired, ceremoniously unretired, you brought me along, and, you know, I'm still out, I'm still trying to get out the gate, you know, but...
You're doing pretty good.
But you you definitely included me, shared everything with me, and shared accounts with me, and that for me, is the way to bring someone on, instead of feeling jealous or threatened by it.
Unfortunately,
here I am, having been doing this for 30-some-odd years, you were like, dude, I want that. You know, I find it incredible, dude, because it shows me your lack of an ego, really. Yeah. You know?
Well, it took time.
And you can still have an ego and still want to bring your guy up.
There is such thing as a good ego.
Yeah.
Wanting to be the best to help somebody
else. For sure.
So the one I was kind of looking at was Chuck. Like you said, we could teach him clinical, but he does get nervous.
Chuck gets nervous?
Yeah. Chuck gets nervous. Well, let's say Chuck gets nervous around clinicians and is easily intimidated. But he worked at Best Buy, so, you know, he knows sales. He doesn't complain.
So why is he not at NSM anymore?
The fact that, well, he hasn't gotten up. So he has a special needs child in a wheelchair. All right. I know of a...
And, you know, I can appreciate that. Do you know Fred? He has a child with a disability.
I forgot his name, and I apologize. There's somebody in Houston that I met. Used to work
at Travis. Austin. I think he's in Victoria now.
No, it was a wheelchair.
He's Joel's buddy.
Really?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
I don't know, man. He's young. But
so that
looking
is
at everything, I
for
think
for sure, like empathy wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting to do the right
thing. Well, you know, he's turning the wrenches.
Yeah. I just for me, it's Cletus.
Cletus.
I'll give him the call.
All right, Roland, your new ATP apprentice or junior ATP is Cletus.
Yeah. Cletus.
Yeah.
Cletus is my guy.
Did I fail to tell you he's been divorced 10 times and is paying Chingles of child support?
Chingles?
Chingles, wait.
I don't care. He's an ATP. Loves this therapist. I mean, he's working a rehab hospital. He loves talking to the manufacturer's reps.
I'm with you.
And he talks to the ATP after the wheelchair clinic. He's asking questions, dude.
Yep.
He's not interfering. He's standing back. He's observing. He has an interest in CRT. That's my guy. All the way. Now, I would interview both of them, having been a manager for, 15 years of my adult life in this field. I would have interviewed for sure Floyd. Floyd, right? No, Chuck. Yeah. Him and Chuck would have made the final two if these were my three. And there's other factors, dude. Does Cletus live local, or is he from San Antonio or Austin or somewhere else? So that plays into it. Is he going to want to leave? Because the Valley's going to, you know, it's going to be a culture shock, dude, working down here. Now, because I'm assuming we're in McAllen.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a culture shock, heat, humidity.
I forgot to mention, he doesn't speak Spanish.
I don't care. Neither do the guys, some of the most successful guys I know.
Yeah.
They don't, they figure it out. And, dude, when I moved here, I couldn't speak it perfectly, dude. Like, I was really bad, like really bad. Like, I understood everything. I just couldn't convey myself or convey my message very clearly. Now I can.
It's the same language. We talk wheelchairs. So,
Orlando.
This episode was pretty much just to give you an idea of who we are and just to get the idea out there. It's not perfect. We're not claiming to be perfect doing this. But we're going to learn as we go. We're still trying to figure out the software. I don't even know how to put a song before the podcast.
We tried to
get that Kanye West, what's it called? Stronger. I think it's a perfect song, man.
We didn't want to get banned.
I forgot to tell you about our other partner in the show, Wheels. Wheels is our AI, and it's amazing. So I asked Wheels, I go, hey, why can't I use the Kanye song Stronger? Well, it informed me that we could probably get sued and thrown off all streaming platforms. So we're working right now to get an intro song. So I'm thinking the next episode, we're going to get Danny Flores.
Yeah.
Danny Flores has a spinal cord injury. He's a quadriplegic. But Danny has gone back to school, got his college degree in the wheelchair, and now he's a robotic professor at PSJ.
Wow.
Yeah. So I want to get him on.
That's the guy from the expo.
Yeah. The guy that was on the toy on wheels.
Yeah.
So he's going to come on. But at the same time, I want to try to bring in a therapist.
Yeah.
So he or she can explain what the injury caused, what's being impacted. So everybody has a good idea. And then we can come back, Phil, and say, hey, I think you need this type of chair we'll virtually design this chair. So that is going to be the plan. We had a little bit of an outro that we want to try, but I think we're going to save it for next time. So we practice it a little bit. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the talk. I'm really excited about this. And we're going to get better.
We're going to interview all the legends of the biz.
Yes. So you'll be getting a call from us. You know who you are. I already talked to, I texted Duane about getting him in, about talking shape capture.
Yeah.
And get Mark Scott in here.
Yeah, Duane is really talented at it, dude. Jeez. I was so intimidated. Kind of.
Yeah,
kind
he's
of.
Good. He did all the molds for Texas Children once Foster.
Yeah, I can tell the repetitiveness, the way he moved.
Good.
It was absolutely amazing. One of the best dudes I've ever seen do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely in my top five, top three, top four, somewhere in there.
We'll have our top five later on.
Yeah. Top five. Yeah. We'll rank ATPs. We'll rank them.
Oh, I don't know about that.
We'll rank them by attractiveness and talent. Oh, I'm joking.
I don't know about that, man. That's all you.
Yeah, I'm joking. We'll cut that out.
All right, man. All right, brother. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And
thank you for the opportunity to do this. Rico, you're the driving force of this whole thing. And
brother, the cool thing about it too, my friend, is that as long as there's podcasts, we're going to live on forever.
Yeah.
Could be the year 3500 of that podcast. You're going to listen to somebody. We will still be available.
Yep.
Kind of crazy, huh?
I love it.
Talk about ego. All right. So we will talk to you later. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll hit you up next time.